Welcome back to The Civic Flame, a podcast where we take a deep dive into the U.S. Constitution. This week, we're continuing our discussion of your rights and why the U.S. Constitution is way more radical than we give it credit for. As always, I'm Amber, a professor of law and policy at Worcester State University and constitutional radical. This week, we're getting into my favorite amendment, the Ninth Amendment, and another straight banger, the Tenth Amendment. If you're the kind of person who likes freedom from the government, grab your torches and pitchforks, and let's go. If you've been a longtime listener, you may remember that we often start by looking at where things come from. Why? Because the founders are all dead, and the best way to understand what problems the Constitution intended to address is to know what was going on at the time. Like any other document, the U.S. Constitution, and in this case, the Bill of Rights, is a product of its time. And at the same time our Constitution was written, there were some major fights about the Constitution. Remember, we get that great Declaration of Independence, but that's not a legal system. So the legal system we get is under the Articles of Confederation. But uh-oh, after only a mere 8 years, the Articles is failing pretty badly. There's some issues, like a lot of states hate each other. This results in states making their own foreign policy and printing their own money. The federal government couldn't pay its debt because it couldn't collect taxes. So we get some stuff out of that, like Article 4 and privileges and immunities and full faith and credit, or Article 1, Section 8 with enumerated powers and the government's ability to collect taxes. What you also get is a huge argument between the Anti-Federalists, who wanted to keep the Articles of Confederation, and the Federalists, who wanted the Constitution. The Anti-Federalists also said they would eventually agree to the Constitution, but only if it had a Bill of Rights. The Federalists said no, because if you give a Bill of Rights to people, they're going to get the wrong idea. Alexander Hamilton actually wrote that giving a Bill of Rights would give more power to the federal government, because why would you list certain rights as extra protected unless the government had some authority in that area? Because the government only has the authority we give it, of course it doesn't need a Bill of Rights to keep it out. It should just stay out of our business. Now, why am I rehashing that again? Because that's exactly why we have the Ninth Amendment. The Ninth Amendment is my favorite amendment, and it should be yours too. Here's what it says. The enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. So bite me, government overreach. The bite me part was me, not the Constitution, just so we're clear. There has been some question about how strong these protections on individual rights were ultimately meant to be. That is to say, the rights we mention are extra protected. The people get all the rights and all the other ones, just like, you know, the Federalists wanted. But the reasoning is unclear for how far this extends, because the amendment has never even been brought to court. People don't use it, and I argue that they should. Every time the government does something that people sue about, they should bring it up and get precedent on the books over and over and over again that says it is the government's job to prove they have the ability to make a law or make a policy or have power in any area, and they have to prove it every time, that if the government does something that is catastrophically against the will of the American people, then they can't do it. The law protects us. The system protects us. The Constitution protects us. The Ninth Amendment is a fundamental part of the Bill of Rights and premises the priority of that whole popular sovereignty, rights of the people thing. The point is to make it clear that whatever rights are listed are not our only rights. We don't have to search the Constitution for a right to anything. We have that right. The government has to produce some kind of evidence that they have not only the necessity, but the ability to legislate anything that we say or do. And paired with the 10th Amendment, and originally there were some questions about whether these two amendments should be put together. These amendments are meant to limit the power of the federal government specifically, but the government broadly. The 9th by giving the benefit of the doubt to the people, and the 10th by dealing with states' rights. The 10th Amendment says, the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution nor prohibited to it by the states, are reserved to the states respectively, or to the people. This is part of how the U.S. government configures what is called dual sovereignty. The federal government and the state governments are co-equal. This is one of the fundamental aspects of the United States governmental system, and it is embodied all over the place. Dual federalism is why state flags and the national flag fly at the same level. Fun fact, while I was living in Texas, someone tried to convince me that Texas is the only state that can fly its flag at the same height as the national flag because it was its own country. Rather than explain that Vermont was its own country 4 years longer than Texas was its own country, because I didn't want to hurt their feelings or, you know, get shot, I showed them the U.S. flag code, which has a section on this. They looked at what I said, and they still argued with me. This shows one thing very importantly is that people are not convinced by evidence. They are convinced by repetition. And everybody in this person's life had said over and over and over, Texas is the only flag that can fly at the same height as the national flag. But for those of you non-Texans out there, I assure you, the other 49 states are not committing federal flag code violations. Your flags are allowed to be at the same height as the national flag. So are city flags, by the way, because that's federalism. We're co-equal, we have our separate spheres, and we just go hang out there. And federalism is all about these separate spheres. There were things that the federal government had control over, like interstate commerce or the military, and things that states had power over, health, education, morals. Together, this is known as the police powers. And things that municipalities had power over, like zoning laws. But since the Constitutional Revolution of 1937 that helped solidify the New Deal as an appropriate use of federal power, the federal-state distinction has gotten a little fuzzy. Some people compare previous federalism as dual federalism, where there were specifically separated powers, and cooperative federalism, where there's a lot of overlap. This is an argument lately about how much federalism we're supposed to have. The argument is that horse and buggy federalism doesn't make any sense in a time when we have the internet and planes and interstate travel and so on. Others say it's more important now than ever to have strict boundaries, as individual states are meant to have their own culture and their own way of doing things. This isn't an argument that's going away anytime soon, but the good news is you don't have to pick a side. Personally, I think we should always put the federal government on notice, but be happy when it's being useful to us. Well, that's my constitutional radicalism for you. Next week, we'll hit the 14th Amendment and talk about how it matters in relation to the Bill of Rights. In the meantime, like, follow, and share. Follow us on Blue Sky and Instagram, and check out our Birthzillas podcast that is retaking off on Substack or on Instagram at Birthzillas. Until next time, take care out there and keep the civic flame burning bright. The Civic Flame is a Dr. Fun Sponge production with writer Amber Veo and sound producer Matthew Munyon. Thanks for listening.